Fancy a game?
Looks like Tarzan plays like Jane.
You know, I could probably shoot him from here. I'd be doing us both a favor.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, goaltending. So we have bread in the studio that Jared made for me. If you were not listening last hour to the press box, I was on with Steve and Adam, and Jared delivered me 36-hour-old bread.
I'm sorry that it's old.
I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't have any idea. You could have told me it was supposed to be hard bread, and it would have been fine.
Well, I mean, it's a baguette, so it is. I mean, it's supposed to have, like, kind of a chewy crust, but I think we've ellipsed chewy into full-on Louisville Slugger territory.
Are you going to break a tooth?
You've got a row of chompers. I think you'll be okay.
Bob Scucci will join us later. Find out if our prop bet is up yet, the technically correct prop bet. We have exciting news that Brandon Peary, maybe, is staying with Vegas for the long term. I might be too optimistic about the Raiders, too, next season. I've kind of talked myself into they might actually be good. So, you can yell at me for that later in the show, Jared. But UNLV basketball, a two-point win over Colorado State. Colorado State's bad.
I've got so many questions for you.
All right, I'm not going to let you start with questions. We'll get to questions. I'll get derailed on something incredibly stupid and useless. I'm excited, though. Like, UNLV barely beat a bad team. That's not really a good thing, but I'm excited because Marvin Menzies started a smaller lineup. Like, it's not small, it's just normal. But, like, Amori Hardy finally became the point guard in the starting lineup. Joel Tomblay played power forward. They used three guards. Again, it's not actually small. It's normal. But for Marvin Menzies, it is small. And I'm pumped. Genuinely pumped about it because this is the lineup I've been wanting to see. Amori Hardy, Noah Robotham, Chris Clyburn, Joel Tomblay, Jonathan Chalmochachua. And you can put in Backy Jong or Chalmochachua. They're not the exact same player, but they're interchangeable as far as who you want in that lineup and who's going to be good for you. But that's what I want to see. So afterwards, ask Marvin Menzies, hey, what led to you changing the starting lineup? What led to you putting Amori Hardy in there and going to a three-guard offense?
Just trying to, not having Mbake and JTT out there together. We were getting more production when we had Noah and Amori on the floors. When you look at the statistics.
Yeah, Tyler, why don't you look at the statistics more?
Man.
You and Grimala should really sit down with some advanced stats.
We've been waiting on Marvin Menzies to look at these statistics. Like, that's what we've been waiting on. Of course I did. Like, they drubbed BYU for a half with that lineup on the floor. Like, the best basketball in the Marvin Menzies era was that half against BYU with that lineup on the floor. Of course. I've been waiting on Marvin Menzies to be like, oh, hey, they're outscoring people by 30 points. We should use that more often. Get out of here. The first three possessions of this game, though, were terrific. Like, they were unbelievable. It's exactly what I've been looking for. It's exactly why I have been saying since game two, Amori Hardy's the point guard of this team. Here's what UNLV did. First three possessions. They took Amori Hardy, Jonathan Chalmochachua, isolated them to one side of the floor. The other three guys, Tomboy, Clyburn, Robotham, spaced around the three-point line on the opposite side. They had Hardy and Jonathan Chalmochachua run a pick and roll. And what happened? Colorado State's priority was to take Hardy away. So it wasn't really a trap. It was basically a trap, though. They hard-hedged, basically trapped Amori Hardy to make him pass the ball off the ball screen. He hit Jonathan Chalmochachua. First possession, he gets fouled trying to shoot a layup, goes and makes a couple free throws. Second possession, same exact thing. Chalmochachua misses a layup. Spoiler alert, that happened a lot. Third possession, Colorado State was like, huh, we shouldn't let that big guy keep getting these layups. They could have gotten away with that, honestly, but they were like, huh, we shouldn't let that guy keep getting layups. So they rotate. The guys that were on the shooters, one of them leaves to come down into the paint to help Jonathan Chalmochachua. Amori Hardy reads it, kicks it to Clyburn. The guy guarding Clyburn had left. Noah Robotham's man was like, huh, I'm going to go guard Clyburn now. Clyburn to the corner, Robotham for three, drained it. Perfect. Perfect offense. First three possessions, they got a layup, free throws, and a three-pointer. That's what you want. Those are the three shots you want in college basketball, and they got all of that on the same play. And the best part of it, Amori Hardy, like, Colorado State made an adjustment three possessions into the game. Amori Hardy didn't need a timeout, didn't need anybody to tell him. He beat the adjustment. Like, it was unbelievable. That's why I've been yelling at you that Amori Hardy is the best point guard on this team. It's because when they give him a ball screen, good things happen. They get good shots when Amori Hardy gets ball screens. They get tremendous shots when he gets ball screens, and they have this three-guard lineup on the floor where you can put three guys that they don't really have good percentages, but defenses still give them some respect from the three-point line. When you put actual spacing into your offense, you get good shots. And, like, Amori Hardy read the defense perfectly, and they got terrific shots. Like, it's, I love it so much. Like, I absolutely love it so much. He had 9 assists. Hardy had 9 assists in this game where his team shot 33%. If they, like, made threes or just layups, he would have had, like, 15 assists in this game. It's incredible. Like, Hardy will have some bad games. His decision-making will be poor. He might struggle to finish if teams take away the passes, but he has some great point guard ball screen skill sets. Like, he's good at that. And that's what UNLV started this game with. And they went away with, there were some times in this game where the offense was like, Joel Tomboy just didn't pass it, took a shot 15 feet away. That wasn't good. But overall, the offense was really good. Like, what they did offensively was excellent. The way they ran sets, the way they got shots, the shot quality in this game was great. Because if you look at the numbers here, the offense was terrible shooting the ball. 33%
okay,
in the game.
I was about to look up the number.
They were 8 of 34 from 3. That's 24%. That's bad. They were 11 of 29 on layups and dunks. 11 of 20. That's 38% on layups and dunks.
So within, you know, a foot and a half of the rim.
38%. Most teams shoot about that from 3. And UNLV was shooting it on layups. I don't even know how it's possible. Like, that is terrible. Like, that percentage is atrocious. And despite that, despite it all being brutal, the reason I thought it was one of their best offensive games of the season is because the shots they got, again, 29 layups or dunks, 34 threes, 24 free throw attempts, 11 mid-range jumpers. That is wonderful. That is wonderful shot selection. You could go down to 0 mid-range jumpers. That would be better. But only 11 when you take 29 layups and dunks, 34 threes. Like, that's excellent. Now, this team in particular, you would like to see more layups and dunks than threes because, well, they're not a good layup team either, but they're really not good from three. But that is high-quality shots. That is what offense is supposed to look like. That offensive game will produce wins. And they scored, listen, 1.13 points per possession, right? They were over 1, which is sort of the benchmark for average in college basketball, despite shooting that poorly. It's because of free throws. They got to the free throw line 24 times. They made 20 of them. Like, that's why. And, man, free throws are terrible to watch. Like, just from a aesthetics view, teams shoot a lot of free throws. Oh, UNLV shoots a lot of free throws. It's terrible, but it's efficient. And, like, that's what UNLV's best at on offense. Like, the more they get to the free throw line, the better this team is going to be offensively. And that's why they had a fairly efficient offensive game. Oh, and by the way, that game ended on a goaltending call, which is hilarious, and was like the perfect way that game could end.
Do you want to play?
Oh, how did John Sandler call that? Was this good? Was this an excellent call from John Sandler? On because I was confused. I thought they were calling a foul at first, so I want to hear how John Sandler handled this.
To Hardy. Hardy drives. Hardy in the lane. Floater rolls out. Tipped up, no good. Mbake puts it up, no good. Hardy grabs it, and they call goaltending. Goaltending on Colorado State. Boy, the Rebels battled and battled and battled, and the goaltending call gives the Rebels a 2-point lead with 1.2 to go.
Robert Smith was all over that.
Were there 4 or 3, like, 3 shot attempts?
3 shot attempts. So officially UNLV was 1 of 3 because Hardy missed, Tomboy had a tip in and missed it, and then Jong had a tip in. That's when the goaltending happened. Now, I'm pretty sure Jong's shot was going to miss anyway, but Nico Carvacho stuck his hand through the rim, which you can't do, and that's why goaltending was
going. Yeah, you can't
grab the net. Yeah, it's against the rules. Sandler kept calling it because there was about to be a fourth one, but they called it because there had been goaltending. So, yeah, they were about to go 0 for 4 on that possession. That's what was going to happen if Nico Carvacho had not stuck his hand straight into the net. But, yeah, goaltending in that game is perfect. Like, that's exactly how that game deserved to end.
I saw your tweet, and here at the studio, you know I send out a big list of all the highlights from the basketball game each night after the game. One thing I did notice, as you said, I didn't have very many long two highlights.
No?
But the other thing is, I didn't have very many highlights because free throw. And he made it. Not a whole lot we can do with that on the radio.
Not many made shots in the game. Like, they just didn't exist. The context matters here, because, like, big picture, this is a bad win. Like, I'm raving about the offense and Amori Hardy at point guard, and, like, this is what I want to see. Colorado State is bad. And UNLV trailed for 31 minutes in this game. Like, they were down by double digits to a really, really bad team. Like, they're 5-9. They've lost to South Dakota. I think they've got one win since Thanksgiving. Like, Colorado State is just not good. And to be in, like, they were in danger of getting blown out. Like, they're down 11. Colorado State goes on a 6-0 run. You're getting blown out by a terrible team. So, like, this is not a good win. And, like, if you're looking towards the future, it's not really like, oh, yeah, UNLV's going to be good in the Mountain West. No, but what I saw from them offensively is what I've been waiting to see from them really since Marvin Minsky's got here.
If they played this game 100 times, there's no way they missed that many times near the rim.
Well, they'll probably do it like 12 more times. UNLV's not good, but yes, most of the time they're not going to shoot 38% on layups. Like, that's terrible.
But that's also a statistical anomaly.
Yeah, but they're also not good on layups. Like, they'll have other bad shooting nights that are just like, oh, they can't make a layup, but it's not going to be 38%, because that's just horrific. I need to go back and look and figure out, because they had a handful of transition baskets. Like, if you take out the transition baskets, like, they might have been like 6 of 25 on layups or something like that. Like, in the half court, their layups, I mean, it didn't matter. Like, you hoped they got fouled is what you were hoping for when UNLV had the ball, because they were not going to put it in the basket.
This may come up later, and so I'm going to check the briefs very lightly.
And you're
going
to do this while talking to sort of stall at the same time?
Yes, I'm stalling. Nunu played center.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay, because
it was not good.
I'm listening to the call, and I'm trying to cut highlights, so I'm like peering up every once in a while going, what's he doing? And oh, nope, there's something.
It was not good. They should have just played like Ben Coupette at center. It would have been better off that way. Get Georgie Slavonchinen off the bench. He was sick, though. He wasn't even there. Could have been Georgie's time to shine. You got any more questions?
Yes, but you told me to hold off on them, and so
you can ask them now.
Now
you're scared.
Well,
oh, you forgot them all.
Well, no, it was long twos. You answered that one. It was Nunu at center, which, yeah, I guess was just weird. And then it was, is there any indication that this wing, like a wing type offense of three guards, will make more shots comparatively?
It should, but Clyburn and Hardy and Robotham are all below 30% from three. Those are your three guards in the offense. None of them are shooting well from three. Like, Tomboy is the best three-point shooter on this team right now, and his percentage is going down at the moment as well.
All right, final one. The final three by Robotham.
Front of the rim. It was good. Shooter's touch. That's what you call it. Shooter's touch. You leave it short, but hey, it hits the rim and goes 6 feet in the air and comes back in. Shooter's touch. Good job. So, yeah. I don't know. Colorado State's not good, so there's nothing to be all that excited about other than the sort of the style they put out there, just because, and I think we're going to see that going forward.
Be excited about that.
Totally correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the BeConnect sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
I love you. I love this guy.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well. Nico Carvaccio scored 28 points on 12 of 16 shooting for Colorado State.
So I was wrong yesterday when I said Carvaccio would be a good matchup for UNLV. Because, like, oh, they got a big guy they play through. That's good for UNLV. He carved him up. Sean Muchachua and Jong got in foul trouble.
He waxed that ass.
They both had two fouls in the first, or I think it was 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So that hurt them. And then for some reason, UNLV asked Tervell back to guard him. And I don't know why. Like, they put him at center because they don't have another center with Dembele being out. But, like, I don't know why Joel Tomboy was not guarding Nico Carvaccio. I guess you can make the argument that Tomboy had to guard a perimeter player, and you don't want Tervell Beck doing that, but they were just throwing it into Carvaccio, and Tervell Beck's bad defensively. And he played a game that justified the coaching staff not playing him ever again.
Oh, God.
Like, here's the thing. Tervell Beck is not good on defense. He's just not. He's slow on defense, flat-footed, whatever it is. He's slow on defense. But on offense, he's an efficient player. Like, he shoots a very high percentage. He gets good shots. In that game, he was 1-6 shooting with 2 turnovers in 10 minutes.
Wasn't one of his a breakaway?
Oh, yes, that was the one he made. He beat everybody down the floor somehow. Out of shape, Tervell Beck running fast. I don't know. Like, you can't play Tervell Beck if he's going to go 1-6 because he doesn't give you anything on the defensive end of the floor. He's got to be good on offense.
He gives you a body.
Barely. He's got to be good on offense. He's got to be efficient on offense. So if he's 1-6 with 2 turnovers in 10 minutes, you just can't play him. Like, there's no reason to play him. Now, Ben Coupette's not really a better option. So I don't know where you go. If Georgie's not sick, maybe him.
Could we, with the right amount of time, turn Beck into a charge specialist?
Just takes charges?
Yep.
All right, I'm down for it. That would be the best. I mean, last year, Jovan Morin just took charges, and that might have been UNLV's best defense.
UNLV is 1-0 in the Mountain West for the first time since 2014.
That is also the last time UNLV finished with a Mountain West record above 500.
How much of that's scheduling, though? Like, having to play good teams early?
Is it playing good teams early, or is it just that the Mountain West is bad this year, so the chances of them playing a good team early was very low? Let's see. Last year was Boise State. Boise State was good last year. The year before that was Colorado State. Yeah. Oh, yeah. UNLV, that was UNLV's terrible year, so that was going to be a loss regardless. The year before that, Fresno State, they weren't that good. And in 2015, they started off with Wyoming at Wyoming. Yeah, it's not that
The bus
impressive.
Broke down on the way there.
Yeah, like, whatever. But, like, this program's been bad in the Mountain West recently, and they've always been playing catch-up because they always lose their first game. So starting 1-0 is good, and maybe they get off to a good start, and they get through January, and they're, like, 3 games above 500, and they just coast. They're like, yep, we're going to be 10-8. We're going to be the 4 seed. Success. Extension for Marvin Menzies. Nailed that timing to mess you up.
UNLV picked up its first win of the season in the white jerseys.
1-2. They lost Loyola Marymount in Cincinnati. Now they got the win over Colorado State. Your color breakdown: gray jerseys 5-2, black jerseys 1-1, red jerseys 0-1, whites now 1-2.
Do we have black jerseys?
Yep. I hate watching them on TV because I cannot read anybody's number. That's terrible. No clue what's happening when they wear the black jerseys.
Yeah, you
TV.
Get a basketball hoop in the way whenever you watch them in person.
Yeah, it's just awful. But yeah, we're gonna keep up with this because I'm excited. I was surprised they went back to the white jersey. They were 0-2. Thought they were gonna get rid of those, but they brought them back and they won in them. So they'll wear them again on Saturday.
CBS Sports Network did not televise the first 11 minutes of the UNLV Colorado State game.
So the joys of having CBS Sports Network as a TV partner is that this happens all the time.
Well, I mean, but also, that UCF game.
USF.
Oh, sorry, USF.
It was so good you didn't even know who was playing it.
Whatever directional Florida team is playing is somehow more important.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think that's arguable. Why would that be arguable?
I'm not. Oh, okay. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm like, yeah, the directional schools of Florida at this point are probably higher priority than we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, UConn South Florida is a better matchup than UNLV Colorado State. The issue, though, is it's not a UNLV issue because, like, every time this happens, people complain that UNLV's got to they're not good enough or something. This is the Mountain West TV deal. Like, they signed, the conference signed this TV deal higher up than UNLV. So the Mountain West gets screwed because they are the West Coast conference that CBS Sports Network televises. So they are always the late game. And I think they had a triple header yesterday. So what happens is there's always a game before, and it always runs over because CBS Sports Network is dumb. And they take a sport where college basketball, I think the average is 2 minutes and 7 seconds, or 2 hours and 7 minutes. That's how long it takes to play a college basketball game. CBS Sports Network is like, here's a 2-hour window. Every single time it's going to run over. Every single time. And that, I don't know what happened in that USF UConn game, because there was 5 minutes left in that game when UNLV tipped off. It's like, you guys missed 11 minutes. Like, that's ridiculous. He missed the first two. All right, we'll give you a break. He missed 11 minutes? What are we doing? That's a fourth of the game. They just couldn't get it on. So, like, they have a web page you can go watch it, and, like, I'm young, I can do that, but I know lots of people are like, UNLV sucks. I'm not going to, like, okay, now I got to pull out my computer. Like, okay, what does that say? CBSSports.com/CBSN. Yeah, people aren't going to do that. So it's just a bad setup. Like, this is why the Mountain West is considering dropping a TV partners altogether when their TV deal is up and just going to a streaming stadium service. Like, just go into, like, here, Amazon, broadcast our games, or Netflix, broadcast our games, Netflix. Like, that's what they're considering
doing. I mean, like, even my parents can work Amazon, so that actually is not a bad idea. They might actually get more viewers.
The big complaint is they probably do get more viewers when they're on Facebook Live than they do on actual television. I would bet they do. When it's CBS Sports Network, I bet they get more on Facebook than they do CBS Sports Network. But the actual, like, big problem that people complain about in the Mountain West, I should say the schools complain about, is the late start times, because you have football games start at 8. This was only 7:30, so it was 30 minutes later. But it's really bad when you're being forced into later start times and you still can't get your whole game on TV. Like, UNLV started 30 minutes later than they normally would, and they still couldn't get the first 11 minutes of the game on TV. So it's not a good television setup for the Mountain West. And CBS Sports Network, I don't even know if people pay attention to it.
Okay, good. It's not in the briefs. Sorry. When you do the press box before this,
you don't get your sloppy seconds.
Yeah, I don't get a chance to review the briefs like that's ever helped. I will say the fact that all of our games start super late is a contributing factor for when I was a student never going to the games, because, okay, so it's going to be 8 by the time the game starts. It's going to be 7:30 in the game by the time the game starts. I'm going to get out of there around 10:15. I have to drive all the way home. It's going to be 11, and then I have to go back Thursday to class at 7 a.m.? Nope, not doing it. So there's a level of, if you're going to be mad about the attendance, schedule the game a little earlier.
People show up for lights games at 8 p.m. at Cashman.
I don't have a retort for that.
The Raiders will break ground on their practice facility in Henderson on January 14th.
Live remote.
I do enjoy people acting like the practice facility is going to be some economic boom for Henderson. I very much enjoy that. I just hope that we get some
sort of... Are
they
going to have, like, a cafe? Or?
I don't know. I just enjoy that people think that. I hope that we have some sort of divide in this town where, like, the Summerlin side is like, yeah, we're the home of the Golden Knights. Like, the Henderson side is like, yeah, we're the Raiders side. And I don't know why, but
meanwhile, the North is just like, I guess Cashman is, I mean, it's not technically within our limits, but, I mean, it's within, you know.
Viva Lights.
Yeah, quarter mile. Viva Lights. No?
Yeah, I'm here for it. I'll move to the north side of town.
Max Pacioretty skated with the third line at Golden Knights practice yesterday.
Brandon Peary still on the second line. That means we read too far into it.
We have to.
They might be considering Brandon Peary for the second line when Max Pacioretty gets back, which would make Pacioretty a third liner, which would mean Brandon Peary is going to stay with the Golden Knights and not get sent down. Maybe. Possibly. I'm excited for that because Brandon Peary is incredible. It's got to make Ryan Carpenter, Oscar Lindberg nervous, because, like, someone has to get sent down. to keep Pacioretty and Peary, unless someone gets hurt.
Which, at this point, someone could
True. Yeah, that's true. I guess the Golden Knights could, like, make somebody fake an injury and put them on IR.
Or actually deal with the injury that they've been like, nah, I'll play through it. You've been bleeding a lot during practice.
Just take a week off. That's probably the most likely answer. Yeah, somebody's just going to magically go on IR. It could be the Valentin Zhukov guy, who I still don't think he's in Vegas yet. He's got some immigration problems or something, and he's not here, and they claimed him off waivers like a week ago. They could just waive him again, and he could be the answer to it. So, yeah, but Brandon Peary, hopefully he's staying.
Marc-Andre Fleury was the only Golden Knight selected for the 2019 All-Star Game.
There is a final fan vote. Jonathan Marchessault could get in as well. But the way the All-Star Game is set up for the NHL is it's strange because you have it by division and only 10 players get in each division. There's 8 teams in the Pacific Division, so everybody gets one for sure, and then there's 2 sort of extra spots, and San Jose got both of them. Which is stupid, even though the game's in San Jose. Because they play 3-on-3. You know, you get 6 forwards, 2 defensemen, 2 goalies. Like, that's what you get. So you have to be the best player on your team to make it. Like, it's impossible to make the All-Star game as a defenseman. There's only 2 in every division. Stupid. But, yeah, 10 players per division. Each team's got 23 on the roster. So it's like, yeah, you make an All-Star game, you're either really good or you're just the best player on a really bad team. Like, Clayton Keller for the Arizona Coyotes, I think he's got, like, 10 goals this year. He's barely outscoring Brandon Peary. He's an all-star.
Well, he's not on pace to outscore Brandon Peary.
Well, when Peary gets sent back down, he will be.
Well, that was the fun part that I saw was Peary is the AHL player of the month for December, and he might be the player of the month for the NHL too.
Yeah, he's been in the NHL for like 2 weeks. Yeah, we're still going to give him the AHL Player of the Month. He was really good those first 14 days of December.
And he was really good those last 14. Oh, man, I didn't do math well there, did I? All right.
Southern Utah's Dwayne Morgan has been ruled out for the season.
Yeah, shoulder injury. He hasn't played since the UNLV game, since Kurt Beck ended his career.
Maybe that was... Okay, let's go to our conspiracy theory. Maybe the reason you put Tervell Beck at center.
He was trying to take Nico Carbacho
out.
There you go.
You've got 2 pelts. Go for 3.
So, Dwayne Morgan had already hurt his shoulder previously to the Tervell Beck situation, but Beck re-injured it. So, he's only going to play in 4 games this year. He only played in 21 last season. He played in 8 in his last year at UNLV before getting hurt. He's had the second half of his college career hasn't been great because... Listen, 24/7 out of his top 25 recruit in the class, and he never really panned out after that. Like, second half of his college career has been downhill where he can't really stay healthy.
I mean, he's been coaching at Southern Utah.
That's true. He's a good
too.
Coach. Great coach, Southern Utah. As long as he's not trying to steal that cop car. Yeah, it's a good one. All right. Bob Scucci up next. Oh, Jared has a brief.
Yeah, don't
yeah,
worry about it.
Brief.
All right, fine.
NBC's top 10 rated markets for Liverpool versus Arsenal on Saturday. Number 1.
I don't want to talk about this.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, Arsenal got drubbed.
Yeah, I know. Well, terrible. I know that, but I'm saying that...
Major League Soccer to Vegas.
Yes.
Make it happen. Let's go. The lights are going to start using that as some promotional tool or something. Like, you guys watched Arsenal-Liverpool. Come watch us.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Time to get an update from the sports book with Bob Scucci.
It's just an interception waiting to happen. We renamed interceptions. He threw a Peterman. A pick six is now called a Peterman.
Brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Bob Scucci with us. All right, we'll get this out of the way. UNLV and Colorado State. UNLV won but didn't cover. Which bad Mountain West team did you need last night?
We need a UNLV.
Oh, God.
It's not good. I guess the answer could have been neither because nobody bet on it, too.
We didn't get much action on the game, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
It wasn't a big decision.
How bad is the Mountain West? Like, UNLV's not good, but they're going to be favored in a lot of these games against Mountain West teams.
Yeah, no, the Mountain West is definitely down this year. You know, typically you have San Diego State, New Mexico up there at the top, along with, you know, UNLV, Nevada. But this year it's just, you know, Nevada and then all the also-rans. So it's pretty down. I mean, UNLV's on top of the Mountain West right now, right? So enjoy it while it lasts.
Nevada beat down Utah State. What did you guys have them favored in that game?
Don't remember offhand. They were big, sizable favorites, double digit favorites. They were huge favorites in that game.
Are they going to be double digit favorites in every game?
I would imagine. I can't imagine any of the games, you know, unless some of these teams by the end of the regular season really improve quite a bit. You know, Nevada is one of the top five teams in the nation, so they're going to be they're going to be double digit favorites in every game in the Mountain West.
So, all right, Golden Knights, and I know you guys have a kind of a bias with it since they're the local team that gets a lot of action. But where do they stand right now as far as Stanley Cup odds? Because they've found themselves sort of back up towards the top of the Western Conference standings.
Yeah, no, they've made a run back. We've got them at 7-1 right now, and they're kind of right there among some of the favorites. The Tampa Bay Lightning are the favorites at 4-1. The Jets are actually at 6-1 right now. So there's a few of them right there at the top, but the Vegas Golden Knights had climbed all the way down to like 12-1, 13-1 at one point, and now they're back up to 7-1. So little peaks and valleys there.
What would that 7-1 be if this was, or what do you guys have it in Mississippi if you guys have it there?
Right now we've got them the same down there, so there's not much local bias. It's pretty much the same. The only teams we really have different down there in Mississippi, in all sports, is really the Saints, because there's such a local bias for the New Orleans Saints down there. But everything else is pretty much the same right now.
Are you guys going to have to close your sports books in Mississippi if the Saints win the Super Bowl?
We definitely, that's the worst team. We definitely do not need them down there, and I think everybody's in the same boat that has a property down anywhere close to New Orleans, but they're not Saints fans in the sports book down there.
All right, one last thing for you on the Golden Knights. Brandon Peary has scored 6 goals in 7 games, and I know you guys don't necessarily put up odds for individual games, but if you were to set an odd for like every game, let's just say tomorrow's game, for Brandon Peary to score, is the yes the favorite?
No, you know, he'd still be not the favorite because it's still so hard to score. He'd be a slight underdog.
Just
to
a slight
not
one.
Score.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. NFL playoffs. We mentioned the Saints. What wild card game is the most popular for you guys this weekend?
There's some really good ones, but I think the most popular one is Seattle and Dallas. Yeah. Just a lot of intrigue with that one. We've got more tickets on that one than any of the other ones. A lot of professional money is on the Seahawks, but the Cowboys just have such a big fan base around the country, and particularly here in Vegas. And we've noticed it quite a bit in the sports books the last 3 or 4 weeks. When the Dallas Cowboys score a touchdown, it's the loudest roar of any other team. So there's a lot of Dallas fans around town.
What any of these wild card games really one-sided?
You know, I'm a little surprised at the money on the Colts against the Texans. You know, we opened up the Texans a 2.5-point favorite against the Colts, and it's down to 1.5, and it's just all Colts money. A lot of it is professional money, but just a little surprising in that, you know, this is the third time they're playing this year, and both games were decided by 3 points, one of them in overtime. I don't see any real advantage on one side or the other, but just a ton of money on the Colts.
Is there a difference in the spread for the Eagles if Carson Wentz is fully healthy versus Nick Foles?
At this point, I really don't think so. You know, they've finished up the season with Foles, so this number is pretty solid with Foles in there. I think we'll get some betting outfits that would probably see a little bit of value on Wentz, and the number may come down a little bit. But right now, I know a lot of people that have power ratings a little bit higher with Foles in there, and the Eagles certainly finished up the season great with him at the helm there. So I'm a little surprised in the betting on this one. I thought there'd be a little bit more Eagles money from the general public. But this one is also kind of really heavy on the Bears, both from the general public and kind of the sharp guys too.
Bob, how often this time of year do you hurl obscenities at kickers?
I hurl obscenities at everything. this time of year is pretty bad.
So, all right, NCAA title game. How is our prop bet looking? Is it up yet?
I'm putting it up today, and Woo! You're going to be a little surprised at it, I think.
Uh-oh.
But the over-under is 34.5, and I've got the under favored by $1.20.
The under favored. All right. I think I'm taking the under, and Jared's
yes.
taking the over.
Yes,
okay.
You are.
I think so. What Alabama's number one running back is number 34, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And Damian Harris and so I kind of threw him out of it, so he would be part of the under as well. And about 80% of the touchdowns are scored by guys with jersey numbers under 34.5. I mean, you look at all the major scoring of all the touchdowns, Najee Harris and Josh Jacobs, Devontae Smith. I mean, that's the primary scoring, and all of them have numbers of like 22, 8, and 6. And on the Clemson side, it's even more pronounced. I mean, out of the 80-some-odd touchdowns they've scored, about 70 of them are from jersey numbers below 30.
Bob, how bored are you, and how bored is the public in general with Clemson, Alabama?
Very. Everyone I've talked to, most of the college football fans, and I'm talking about real college football fans, they just don't want to see this matchup anymore. And I think it's going to be reflected a little bit in some of the ratings. You know, maybe not so much the betting, because you've got that point spread in play and you've got a good team getting 5.5 or 6 points. But at some point, you see the matchup, you know, too many times, it kind of loses its luster.
Notre Dame getting blown out was good for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. There was so much money on Notre Dame. The public, and I understand it. I mean, it's kind of a sentimental favorite, too, to kind of shake things up. But that was a real good game for us.
Lots of people complain about there's too many bowl games and all this. And I'm just curious, like, from the betting side of this, is that reflected? Like, do people still bet on all these bowl games like normal? Or is there some like, I don't care. It's just give me the playoffs now.
No, what we've noticed, it's diluted, meaning that we still get probably more betting overall if you had to look at the overall money, but it's just spread out over a longer course of time. And you go back many years when there was just a few games, all of that betting money was concentrated on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and kind of that Christmas week when all the major bowl games were going on. And now it's spread out, you know, a few weeks before New Year's, a week after New Year's, and it's a little bit more money because there's more games, but it's just spread out more.
So people still like to watch football, and people that complain about there being more football on are dumb.
Yeah, now there's just a game on every night. That's all.
Well, he is Bob Scucci, sportsbook director at Boyd Gaming. Bob, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Bob.
So 34.5 is our number. So I'm cheering for Damian Williams, or is it Damian Harris? Who knows? Him to score all the touchdowns. Or Tua. Tua can just run them all in, too. I'm okay with that.
And I need to borrow some money.
Yesterday, we had Jake Bischoff on the show. Today, we talked to the new coach of a 15th-place USL team. Are we hooking the brand of the show up to the wrong thing?
No.
Are the right things?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we sure?
I'm 100% positive that this is our lane.
This is our path to stardom.
Well, I don't know about stardom, but this is our path.
All right.
This is, no one else is going to this well.
Okay.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
All right, the Raiders are going to be good next year, Jared. Maybe. They could.
It's not good. That's not a good thing.
I know, that's true. All right, so I'm going to set this up with, first off, this sort of question. How many holes do they have on their roster? Like, if you took the current roster...
We've discussed this question a lot.
Yeah, but now, we've sort of done it in different spots. But now I want to do, I want to go through this. If we look at this roster, how many holes do they have to fill to be good? Defensively, it's a lot. They definitely
offensively,
need...
Offensively, it's a fair amount, too.
Defensively, it's more, and we'll get to the offense.
Okay.
on the defensive line, you take the defensive tackle spot. They need at least one defensive tackle that's better than every defensive tackle they have on the roster. Defensive end or edge rusher, they probably need two. Like Arden Key, okay, he's young. You can be excited about him. You probably need two edge rushers better than Arden Key. So we're up to three holes. Linebacker, they probably need two. Markell Lee, Tahir Whitehead are fine, but you need two linebackers that are better than them. They need a cornerback to go along with Gary and Conley. They need a safety to go along with Carl Joseph, and they probably need a slot corner, nickel corner, whatever you want to call them, because teams are using their slot wide receivers and torching teams. So they probably need three defensive backs. Offensive side of the ball, what do they need, two wide receivers?
If you're thinking Aitman's going to make the the jump, then yeah, they need two. If you're realistically trying to build this team, they need three.
I mean, you could be fine with Jordy Nelson and Seth Roberts, just three or four. You can figure it out.
I was assuming Jordy retires at the end of
this. No, he's coming back. They gave him his roster bonus for next year. He's coming back.
Okay.
We're going to have to make one assumption. Colt Miller is good. We're making that assumption. You need a right tackle. You don't need an interior line. You need a running back. Probably not smart to spend a bunch of money there, but like you got Doug Martin and Jalen Richard and Mike Allstott Jr.
Yeah, I actually kind of like their running back depth if once they're all
healthy.
But
none of them are signed. I think it's either Richard or Washington is signed for next year. Like none of those guys are signed. So they've either got to sign those guys back or go get somebody else. And they need a tight end that's not a blocking tight end because Jared Cook's a free agent. So they need a tight end that's not Derek Carrier.
And they need a quarterback.
Maybe. So
can we go back to the defensive side?
What about the defensive side?
Well, there's going to be, I think, at least two defensive tackles that are mid-level replacement, like upper tier mid-level replacement. Like Sue's on a 1-year deal, and Snacks, isn't he on a 1-year deal?
Are those guys not better than replacement level?
No, they're above average. Okay. Like they're upper tier.
Oh, I see what you're trying to say. Okay.
And those would both be available and within budget.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what we're doing here. So what would that come out to? 12 or 13 holes they need to fill? That's a lot. But part of what Mike Mayock was saying during his press conference earlier this week, the new GM, he was like, part of the reason the job is attractive is because they have three first-round draft picks this year. It's 11 total in this year's draft, and they have a ton of cap space. $77 million is their projected cap space for next year, which is, I think, it's fifth most in the NFL. So potentially there's 13 holes. Can you fill those 13 holes with three first-round draft picks and $77 million in cap space?
If you put me on Madden, yeah. Yeah, I can.
Like, because here's the thing.
I could do that real quick.
You have to hit a ton of home runs. Like, you can't really miss. Because, like, there's 13 holes. You probably need, like, your three first-round draft picks. You probably need to get three starters there. Okay? Now there's 10 holes.
Two of those first-round draft picks are late enough, and this wide receiver like class is got enough depth in it. You could get legitimate like day-one starters.
Yeah. That's what you need.
Slot and at like a speed dude.
That's what you need. And you throw they have a high second-round pick too. So throw that in there as an early second-round pick. You need three starters from those four picks basically. All right. So now you have 10 holes to fill with 70. Well, you'll have less than that when you sign the rookies, but 10 holes to fill with whatever it is, $70 million in cap space. You probably don't have to hit on all of them, but you probably need to hit on eight of them, right? Can you get eight good players with $77 million in cap space? You should be able to.
Yeah, and you should also, hopefully, your scouting team has been looking at guys.
They fired them all with Reggie McKenzie.
No, I meant the John Gruden staff. The John Gruden staff. Hopefully are smart enough to be looking at guys like, I don't know, like Lexington Thomas isn't a great example, but guys you could bring in who you don't have to draft that you could legitimately like your Adam Thielen type guys. Like, yeah, you got to hit home runs on your undrafted people too.
Yeah, that is important too. Like Chris Warren, the running back, like they like him a lot. We'll see if they did well on stashing him on IR all year. So anyways, this whole setup here, 13 holes to fill, all these draft picks, all this cap space. I don't, even if they did a tremendous job, it's not like they're going to catch the Chiefs and the Chargers. So it's not like next year the Raiders could all of a sudden be, you know, a 13-win team. But I think they have a chance to do well in the draft and do well in free agency. they could be a 9-7 team next year.
But that's not... Although, you did, Spark, you put something into my brain that makes me ridiculously happy just because I'm, like, kind of a jerk. It would be great that if they were playing their, like, all-road schedule is the year they go to the Super Bowl and win it. Like, they brought Gruden in. We're going to win this one before we leave Oakland. Oakland says, well, we don't want you. And then they go on a road schedule.
And win the Super Bowl. But, I mean, listen, it's probably in their best interest to be bad this next season and then use all that cap space. Like, they'd probably be better off if they sign a bunch of guys to one-year contracts and they just sort of float along next year, get two more first-round picks the following season, and then go after, like, high-level free agents. But if this team wants to be good in 2019, they can. Like, they've got the cap space and the draft picks that they can fill a ton of holes this offseason. Like, they haven't really started the rebuild. They haven't really done a great job as far as rebuilding yet, but they have the ability to do so. They got the draft picks. They have the cap space. Like, they're not hamstrung by anything. They can start this rebuild and do it kind of quick.
Tyler, you're a bitch.